Let's see. Chaplain of the... When was he chaplain? Was he just... Is he chaplain now?
He was a year or so ago.
Let's see.
He is in newspaper business.
Oh, Ipleen? Paul Lean? Ipleen? Maury Smith? Are you thinking of newspaper business in Fairbanks?
Or? He was a... He worked for a news miner and one of the other papers there. I knew him when I was in the service there.
I see.
Quite well.
I just can't think of who that would be.
I have a good many names that I know just very well.
Beislein?
I can't. What?
Earl Beislein? He was in the service. He served on the... he's just a past president. Bruce Thomas? He's the president of the Igloo now in Fairbanks.
And there was a... Another man that I lost altogether is, he was with the instructor of ROTC at the University of Alaska for quite a while. He was a pilot during the war, and very unusual injury due to fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
His heart ran. The governor of the heart went wrong, so ran the blood pressure way up. It's a wonder that it didn't kill him.
Yeah.
He was a man that I knew very, very close to me. I knew him very well. I can't think of his name. He lived there in Fairbanks.
Well, let's get back to, maybe you think of it when we tell the story. You were telling a story about the...
Oh.
The fighter, was it fighter plane?
Yes. This is that.
Yeah, I just turned it on.
These two Russians were en route from Fairbanks to Nome and planning to go on into Russia. And right at the east side of Norton Sound, the man in the back seat, which was an open cockpit, raised up to just ease himself, and he didn't realize that he had pulled the ripcord of his parachute, and so flipped, he was gone. And I don't know how he got by the high tail on that machine without
getting
snarled up, but he did. And he landed in just a very short distance of the water there. And the pilot didn't, the man in the front seat didn't realize that he'd lost his passenger until he got to Nome.
Mm.
And after they called on a search, and they brought an L-1 seaplane over. This man was a pilot, was a lieutenant, or captain, I believe, at that time. After, this was the man that had been injured in combat flying, out of the hospital, and was restricted to low-level flying because of possible damage at altitude. And he had the enlisted man, a sergeant, the man that I mentioned that served as a chaplain and a pioneer. He was riding with him on the search, and they found this man. They saw a parachute spread out and this man standing in the center of it waving. And the sergeant gets out and runs back. He says, you know, this man rushed up to him and threw his arms around and gave him a hug and kissed him. He said he was sure glad to see somebody.
Yeah, I'll bet he was. That's an unusual accident.
Jerked out and over.
Holy smoke.
With no idea where he was.
Was he Russian?
Yes, he was. He couldn't speak English. And they... Paul related that to me when he got back, and Dick was the nickname of the pilot who was a captain at that time.
But this person, you're trying to remember his name, his first name was Paul.
The sergeant's name was Paul, and the captain was Dick.
But this sergeant, does he live in Fairbanks now?
He did the last I knew.
I'll try to find out who that is.
I know he served as a chaplain of pioneers not too long ago.
Do you belong to the pioneers in Fairbanks?
No, I don't. It's just...
Did you belong at Nome?
No, I don't. I don't belong to Pioneers.
Well, you should join the Pioneers.
It's one of the things that I just never got around to doing, because I haven't. Yeah. Most of the time, I haven't been.
You haven't been close to. You've lived out. Have you lived in Kotzebue quite a lot of the time?
Well, I did my turn on the north in Barrow.
Oh, did you?
I went up there for 2 or 3 weeks to relieve Sig Wein, because he had to go back to Fairbanks. He was took over the management there a couple of years before I got out of the place.
When was
and
that
I had to
too?
Really quit in order to do it.
And yeah. When did you go to Barrow?
I was in... It was very shortly after I got out of the...
45 or 46?
Yeah, around 46. I think or 45 it must have been. They're kind of hard for me to fit those things in.
I know Sig was up there in 43, and then he was back up there in 46 and 47, but I don't know if he was there all of that time.
No, I'll take that back a little bit to the... It must have been when he left there in 47, because I was, I left the Nome area in 47 or early 48 and went to
Barrow for 2 weeks.
Yeah. And then after that I was flying all over the territory, largely with seaplane work, over to Klavik, down to Cordova, around. I was more or less freelance for Wein, because they didn't have very many of the seaplane pilots. That
you flew for Wein, but used your own aircraft.
No, I came back and started up my airline again. See, I left Wein and I organized my own outfit.
What did you call it?
Northern Cross Incorporated.
Northern Cross Incorporated.
And I based at Deering. I had a certificate of convenience and necessity, and the roots of Nome points north and into Fairbanks, and included Cordova.
But you were based at Deering?
I was based at Deering.
And when was that that you organized that, in the late 30s? Was that before World War One or World War II?
Yes, that was before I went in the service, in 37. I just worked for Wayne for a short time. Then I organized my own outfit. And in 41, I went into the service, and I got permission from the Civil Aeronautics Board to suspend operation because I was president and manager of the corporation. And I didn't have any better sense then when I got out in 45 to pick it up again, which I could do legally, but it just wasn't feasible because Wayne and the others that had been operating during the war were fat and sassy, and they had everything was controlled, the supplies and the like. They could buy any airplanes, any parts they wanted. Well, anybody, I was considered breaking into the game again.
Yeah.
I had to pick up used airplanes.
It would have been pretty tough for you.
Yeah. And they were in a competition. Just wasn't practical to start at that at that time. And so I simply...
So you went back to work for Wayne.
I went back to work for Wayne.
Well, if you went to Barrow in 1947, my husband was up there then. He and Sig Wayne went to Barter Island, and was in 47 they went over there. And Sig landed him on Barter. And then they brought in a landing craft with some small equipment and built the strip at Barter. So maybe you met my husband. You might not remember him. His name is Jim Dalton. But if you flew out of Barrow for 2 years, you probably flew him around a few times.
I don't have my logbooks now. Do you happen to know Colonel Bill Landis?
Lambs?
Landis? L-A-N-D-I-S. He's a... He's working probably... Anyway, he's working on the slope now. He worked for Atlantic... the Richfield outfit. And lately he's been... was checking on the camps along where they were building the road. He started to write up a history, and he has. I have diaries and log books that cover all that.
He's writing a history on you?
Yes.
Oh, good. Good for him. Well, that's. I'm glad that someone is interested.
He's a history major, and Air Force colonel.
Is he World War II colonel?
Yes.
And he works for the pipeline company now?
Yes. He's retired. And I'm not just sure just which outfit, whether he's worked for some contractor or not, but he was with Atlantic Richfield. And outside for a while, he owns a place there in Anchorage, and I know him and his family very well. And he was one of the men that went with them to Maxwell Field, the Dalians.
I see.
And was very commanding officer of the airport in Alaska invited us to go with him in his airplane.
Oh, I see.
But we
can't pass up an offer like that.
No.
Well, when you left Barrow, you spent a couple of years up there then. So you must have. Did you come back to Kotzebue area?
I came back to Kotzebue area. Let's see. I was working out of Kotzebue in the early 50s. I worked there. I put in 17 years when I was second in time and retired in 64. I hadn't worked out the mathematics of that, but that's...
You came back to Kotzebue in the early 50s, and then you flew until you retired in 64.
64. A great deal of that was a bush right out of here. And I managed the station here for about a year.
For Ween?
Yes, in 58. I had trouble with the manager here. He goofed off at that time, and they sent some... fellow over here asked me questions about it, and he said, "Well, could you do any better?" And I said, "Well, yes." So they cut my pay in two and doubled my
responsibility,
work hours, and made me station manager. And I had to quit in order to. I went to Sid Wayne and told him, I says, "I'm not working as station manager. They insist that I curtail my flying and spend more time at the desk." I didn't ask for the job, and I don't want it. I says, "If you can use me in a place flying," I says, I'll be available, because I have no other plans. Well, he said, "I think we could have a place for you." But I started flying right here. In fact, I never did stop flying altogether. I was flying by.
While you were station manager?
Yeah.
Well, let's get back to, you have a son who's a flyer. Do you have anyone else in your family who flies?
I got three boys on the wall there. All of them are pilots.
Oh, they are?
Harry. Bessie's boy, who I adopted.
Mm-hmm.
My present wife was married before, and she was, and he was her only son. And he's in the Air Force at Minot, North Dakota. He holds a private license, but his duty is he's an electronics man. He's went into the Air Force right out of his high school, and he was in Minot. He was in charge of these darts, interceptors, mechanical.
Mm-hmm.
Work them, and so they put him indoors and gave him the computer, and he's managing the maintenance. Mm-hmm. Of the Bessie, my oldest boy, is Milton. He put in his stint in Vietnam. He was put in nearly 1,000 hours in combat work with the...
Isn't that right? Flying?
With the helicopter. Gunship.
Yeah. Was he piloting the helicopter?
What?
Was he piloting helicopters?
Yes.
Is he still in the service?
He's with the National Guard. He is in charge of the aviation with the scout battalion out of Nome.
Oh, I see. Does he live in Nome?
Yes. And he flies a fixed wing as well as a helicopter. They have both helicopters and a fixed wing. I've been expecting him over here today. He's due to over here and bring in men from the villages to the airlines here for their
for camp. Training?
Yes. This other boy. It's Edwin Dallas. He lives next door here. He has his own plane. He manages. He's not flying for commercially. He manages the fisheries co-op here, Kotzebue Area Fisheries.
Is that your daughter in that picture?
Yes.
Very beautiful girl.
She's married to a Wien jet pilot.
She's a pretty girl.
All three of our youngsters have a grandchild of Forest Peace. They all three.
Harry was, you say Harry was adopted, you adopted Harry.
This Harry. Mm-hmm.
He's certainly a good-looking boy. They all are really handsome children.
I knew Bessie when she was just a youngster at Deering.
Oh, yes?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What's the daughter's name?
She's Mary Elizabeth, named after her mother. Elizabeth part of it.
What's her married name?
What's
her married name? Her last name now.
Why, Anderson.
Anderson.
Her husband is Alan Anderson, Wien pilot.
Mm-hmm. Alan Anderson. To get back to the early days, when you first came over here in 1936, what kind of aircraft were you? Let's see. You said you came here in 36. Let me check that. Came to Coxby in 36. What kind of aircraft were you flying then?
I brought a airplane over for Kirkpatrick. As I said, when I got out from the active duty at Fort Riley, where I had been for 2 weeks training, I went to Chicago. Delivered a military aircraft there and picked up a Blanca and took it to Seattle, put it on the boat, and they had an open cockpit bird airplane, a Kenner bird that I flew out of there, and they also had a Curtiss Robin, which we put on floats, flew around locally. I only used it on skis, and it was very good on skis. It wasn't much of a float plane. It was too small.
Mm-hmm.
Our chief airplane was a Blanco, and then they later got other Blancos working out of them.
And when you worked there for about a year out of Cordova, and then you came here.
I worked in the fall of 34 when I went there, and I didn't. I was in and out of Cordova and over to. I worked for a while for an outfit that later became Alaska, just briefly. And did this miscellaneous flying there at Anchorage for, oh, less than a month that I was over there. And Kirkpatrick sent for me to come back, and I started flying school then at Cordova. And that is only part of the flying that I did there. I was mostly working into up the Copper River to McCarthy, into Bremner Mine, and around there. And I was doing that when Noel proposition was going to come and take over his station at Nome. And I brought Noel's first Cessna into Fairbanks. It was shipped up on a boat supposed to go to Cordova Air Service, and we were to put it together and get it going, but the strike was on against it, the port at Cordova. So they unloaded it at Valdez. I went over to Valdez, and with the help of Owen Mills, the operator there, put it together and flew it into Fairbanks. And
but it was Noel Cessna. It was destined for Noel Ween.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But he had it sent to Cordova Air Service because we had a shop.
I see.
There.
So because of the strike at Cordova, the plane went to Valdez.
Yeah.
And you and Owen Meals assembled it.
Yeah.
I know Mr. Meals.
Yeah. Quite a character.
He really is an unusual man.
Indeed.
He really is. A self-educated man and very competent. He's
another product of Valdez is Bob Reeve.
Bob Reeve, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you know Bob Reeve when he was flying in that area?
Very well. Let's see, he did some work for Cordova Air Service with his own plane. And I knew him before he was married.
So then you flew Noel Ween Cessna into Fairbanks. Is that when you went to work for?
Yes, I went
Noel?
To work. In fact, I upped the date a little bit in order to take that ship over. It was because Mudhole Smith come in to take my place at Cordova.
I've heard that name somewhere before.
Well, the story with that, of course, I'd been flying the mail down to the coast beyond the Bering Glacier and on down to Yakutaga Beach.
Mm-hmm.
That was before there was any fuel put in there. We landed on the beach. It was very good. But once in a while, a piece of a glacier that had broken off, a big chunk of ice would come in and melt on the beach. Well, it wore a hole down, and the waves, after the ice was gone, that would fill up with just mud. It wasn't soupy stuff.
Yeah.
And it was the same level as the rest of the beach. And if you weren't onto it, you'd get into trouble on it. It was before I left there. Mudhole was just getting his initiation as flying down there before I left. And he goes down there, and he felt the aeroplane kind of slipping, and so he cut the switch and jumped out, but he jumped out on the wrong side. He jumped out on the mud hole side. And
went in the mud hole.
And he really was covered with the stuff.
Yeah.
It didn't hurt the aeroplane. They got the aeroplane out okay. But that named him, because that's one of the first things he did when he he went to Cordova.
Yeah. What was his first name?
Merle.
Merle,
I believe.
Yeah, I've heard about Mudhole Smith.
I was down to his retirement party at the, along with Noel and Sig and mm-hmm. a bunch of them at Cordova. He'd been there, made quite a success at Cordova Airlines. And of course, he went with Alaska, and that was turned down by the merger, turned down by the government, and he went back to working with it. And later, Alaska did take over, and so. But he stayed on at Cordova, managed it for Alaska.
I see. In Cordova, your years in Cordova, was Harold Gillam flying in that area at the time?
He was a competition at out of Cordova.
Mm-hmm.
Kirkpatrick went to work. Came to Alaska to repair aeroplanes for Gillam. Had no intention of flying.
Mm-hmm.
And Gillam got in a fight with Slim Williams up at Copper Center, and he gave Williams a licking, but he had some broken ribs and took him out of the flying game. And Kirkpatrick did some emergency work for Gillam was out, and everybody liked it, and Gillam had more work than he could do anyway when he got to flying again. Kirkpatrick
went
on flying, mm-hmm. and they had a falling out, which involved some personal matters, Kirkpatrick was going to leave, but a bunch of Cordova liked his flying better than they did Gillam's. He was methodical, hardworking. Gillam was a spectacular pilot, but he didn't. In his early days, he was very unreliable as far as when he was going and that sort of thing.
Casual.
Yeah. If there was a party on, it was more important than going someplace and that sort of thing. Later, they got him steadied down and due largely to his wife's management.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know him, but I knew Catherine, his wife.
I didn't really know her.
Yeah, she just passed away about 8-9 months ago.
Of course, his son is in Fairbanks, no?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, I know him.
There was a lady, I forget, Sandy Jensen, I think her name. Do you happen
mm-hmm.
to know her?
Mm-hmm. I knew her, yes.
She was one. He gets some dope on Gillam. And I said, well, why don't you ask your son? I said, he don't know anything about his son. I thought that was really strange. He didn't.
Well, I think I'm trying to recall now, but I know that Harold Gillam Sr. and his wife were separated. And I think it was when the present Harold was just quite young.
Yeah, it could.
I think
could
that's
be.
The way it was. So he probably didn't know his father too well.
Yeah. But Gillam was a character you could write a book or two on Gillam.
Yeah.
The things that he would do. I've often said that I wouldn't fly with Gillam if I had any other choice, but if I had to really go into a tough place in Alaska, in an emergency, there wasn't any pilot that I would put ahead of him.
Mm-hmm.
In later years, he put up a remarkable record on flying the mail down to McGrath, and Bethel down that way. He beat in that contract and he took it away from Pan American. And he flew all kinds of weather. I was sitting in the roadhouse waiting for the weather to clear out, and it's snowing. You couldn't see across the river. And that's before they moved the town across the river. It was it used to be on the other side of the river. And there's a number of pilots there. Pretty soon he heard an airplane. Somebody said, "Well," said, "that must be Gillum." And sure enough it was. Pretty soon he come taxiing in. He just found the river and sat down on it. And he come in, grabbed a sandwich, and he looks out. "Well, I might as well go on to Bethel." He says, "It can't get any worse." And he did.
Yeah. But he did die in an airplane crash, didn't he? What do you recall the circumstances?
What?
Do you recall the circumstances of that crash?
Yes, I wasn't in on the search, but I was very much interested in, of course, that. He had a motor failure with the plane that loaded up to where it didn't have single engine performance. And his flying instruments were going into Ketchikan. The FAA just decided that the main error there was that he had a map that wasn't accurate. And he was coming on in with the motor dead. Mm-hmm. And he saw that he couldn't. That is, one is he's flying an electro twin engine, and he saw the ridge. He was steadily losing altitude, and he just parked it on this snow-covered ridge in the mountain. It's when the girl lost her life there. I've forgotten her name. She was caught in the wreckage where they couldn't get her loose, and she bled to death. And I knew the names of the men, and one of them was I saw a good many times after that. They were not seriously hurt. He stayed there for a long, long time until the search was given up. And finally, Gillum walked out and walked down to the beach. And he died of exposure and injuries. His passenger didn't know that he was hurt, and he was hurt worse than any of them except this girl that bled to death from it. Because they couldn't get to her, couldn't get
but
her.
But they all lived through the emergency landing. Everyone in the airplane lived through the landing.
Yes, except that this girl was hurt so that she died very shortly. A hemorrhage. But Gillum got to the... got down off the mountain and a little beach there on the inside passage along there. And there's some fishing boats that picked up his body there. But the search had been given up. When they found him, then they started looking some more, and they found these people up in the airplane.
How long had they been there?
Matter of it's over a week, I know.
Mm-hmm. Holy
I've forgotten the details on that, but they had a good emergency equipment, although it was cold, it was winter, but they were dressed for it, and it not too bad a shape, bad shape considering what they'd been through.
To get back up into this country where you've flown so much, have you ever been forced down and been lost or been the object of an air search?
Nothing nothing serious. I had been down and I had to have help, like just going over here to no attack. Motor conked out on me and I'd set it down on a river bar. Spent a cold night. And I didn't have tools, which I should have had. It was a gas failure. And I was then just recently after I left Wien, after I retired from Wien, I was flying a small rocket as a small four-place seaplane, carrying firefighters home from a fire at the fire was just east of Kiana, and it took a full load, three men, into Ambler, where they live, and was coming home. It was 11 o'clock at night in the summer, of course, in daylight all the time, and the motor quit on me. I was in a seaplane, and ordinarily keep in reach of the river, but there's one large bend there that I was cutting across, and not particularly high, around 3,000 feet when it quit, and I had it acting just like it was out of gas. I couldn't, but I couldn't get it started, and so I landed at tundra. There's a timber there, but there was some open places, and I landed on the tundra. Clipped the top out of a tree with a wing, which didn't hurt the wing any, and the landing was fairly smooth, but as it stopped, one float tipped into a nigger head, and it bent up the float, around the float. I sat there for, must have been a couple of hours before I heard an airplane coming, and my radio was a VHF, and I couldn't talk to a ground station when I was on the ground. Mm-hmm. But I could talk to the airplane, and I heard this airplane. It happened that it was another plane that had been working at the same thing, and when I didn't get back, he was started out to look for me, and when I heard him, I gave him a call and turned on my light, and the irony of the thing was that when I got that down, I had plenty of gas in mm-hmm. both tanks, mm-hmm. and they found a bunch of mosquitoes in the carburetor, and how they got there, I don't know. They made quite a bit of a fuss over that. It got downed by my mosquitoes. But I don't know. I don't know why that thing stopped and why I couldn't get started, because after I got on the ground, I started the motor and it worked.
Well, did you find the mosquitoes in the carburetor?
Yes, there were. There was. In the
The air intake?
In the sediment
bowl.
Yeah. And they might have blocked it temporarily and shaken up, but
how do you suppose they got in there?
Huh?
How do you suppose they got in the sediment bowl?
Well, I don't know. Ordinarily, they would have been caught by the little screen on the outlet of the tank mm-hmm. before they get to the sediment mm-hmm. bowl, of course. And the sediment bowl would stop them until they got so many of them that no gas would go through there.
I guess you got ribbed about that.
Yeah, and shot down by mosquitoes. This guy Landis, right? He wrote that up in this the Daily and Flyer of that. Uh-huh. I don't know one that ever succumb to mosquitoes in the air.
Yeah. That's a
good story. One interesting thing about that was there was a helicopter. Well, the first, this boy, Milton, had come over to Cayenne, and he stopped there to visit while I was flying. And when I didn't get back, and he goes up to the field and alerts them up there that I was overdue. And they had a helicopter there, one of the Hueys, the same thing that the boy had been flying in Vietnam. And they asked him to come along, so they, at that time, time they got going, I contacted this other airplane, which couldn't land where I was. They come over and pick me up. And the next day, they picked up the airplane.
The Huey did?
Yeah. And they set it in the river, and we flew it in without doing anything else to it.
That's amazing.
We had to change float on that.
Yeah, but you were able to take off.
Yeah. Sure.
That's an easy rescue.
Yeah,
good
story. Remarkable.
Yeah,
remarkable. It was right there, handy. I've had just offhand. I can't think of any other times that I've had anybody looking for me.
Well, you must have gotten good basic instruction when you learned to fly, because
and lucky. I often said I just. A lot of native caution and luck. We have you know Tommy Richards, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He and I started with, let's see. I'm just going to. It must have been 47 that I went back with the wind. If I remember right, Tommy started just a little after I did. He was had learned to fly on with GI Bill of Rights and come over here just. Flying just enough, the merchants here give him enough business to
keep him going.
Keep him here, but and the and I just started in with Wayne, and I saw what Tommy was doing, that he knew it, and he was a the language and that sort of thing, and it worked out pretty well. And we had more work than we could do between here and Nome, and here, and I asked to put him on part-time, or just on temporary basis, without going through all of the formalities they had to nowadays when they put a man on. And he worked out so well that it wasn't temporary. He just stayed on. He worked hard at it, and has been very conscientious in his work, especially.
Tommy grew up here in Kotzebue, didn't he?
Yes, he was born here.
Yeah, I know his wife if she wasn't born here, she was born in this region.
Yes. She was born in... Anyway, her parents lived here.
I talked to her sister yesterday, Evelyn Conwell. I talked to her for a while. And Evelyn was born here in Kotzebue, but her older brother, and I guess the older, I think she said there were 8 in that family, and some were born up in the upper country.
I knew them very well. I flew the brothers around. They worked Old Candlin and other places. It,
tell me about Archie Ferguson. How long was he in this area?
What's what?
How long was Archie Ferguson? He was flying in this area too, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah. Was he here a long, long time? Or?
His parents brought he and his brother Warren, older, up here to dodge in the draft on the First World War.
Is that right?
They were small for their age and just over the line for induction. They up here thought they'd be out of. Both of them were inducted and got as far as Nome. Incidentally, Archie was on the draft board for the Second World War.
Was he?
And the old folks started a store here. And they went up to... First, so they went up the river and... doing some mining in the Kobuk area. Archie was, it's a difficult character to describe because he didn't make any two alike. His brother, like in a good many ways, but more civilized than Archie, and been around enough and dealt with people, and he was a little more do things the way they're supposed to be done. Well, Archie had no inhibitions in business or flying or anything else. A lot of energy and a lot of ideas. Some of them were good.
Well, is Frank Ferguson the one the one who is in legislature, the candidate, he's running again.
Yeah.
Is that Archie's son?
Warren's son.
Warren's son.
Warren drowned at the outlet of the lagoon, at the river. And Archie moved in from the bushes and took over his business.
I see.
And raised enough money so the boy's mother moved to Fairbanks and made a fool of herself, so they adopted the boys. They took over.
Adopted Warren's boys.
Yes. I'm sure that they adopted them, made a legal adoption, because I think the mother was still living. I'm not too sure. But they knew her weakness, and they gave her enough money to make a fool of herself, so they justified in taking over the business and the boys.
Well, did was Archie married? Did he have a wife?
Yes, Hattie, a Selawik native.
Mm-hmm.
Very capable woman.
Did they have children?
Hi.
Did they have children? Archie
no.
and Hattie?
No.
So there's Frank Ferguson, and then he has one brother.
Babe, they call him Frank, and he has two brothers. Ray, who is
Ray.
A pilot. Elton Whitman. Let's see, there's Don, who's flying, Ray. Frank and Babe.
And Babe.
Yeah.
Is that a son or... is that a boy or a girl?
It's a boy.
Four boys.
I should... name. I had a... lived with them in Fairbanks for quite a while. Mm-hmm. He had a place in Fairbanks there.
Is Hadley still living?
She died just quite recently. Last year, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not too sure.
Mm-hmm.
She became a very expert radio operator using an old CW.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, she copied the signal, was able to copy a signal call.
Is that right?
Pretty good.
Yeah,
professional.
Pretty fast.
They didn't used to use voice on that at all.
Yeah.
The station here used CW.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, what is happening in Kotzebue now? I see a lot of activity. Is this a water line that is going in, or?
Oh, that they're extending their water and sewer system. Quite a bit of the village isn't served yet, and just a few days ago they turned over the construction work to the city. There was a project 121, they called it,
mm-hmm.
which was largely experimenting. They've done enough work to fit up a couple of villages. Most of it they had freeze up and had to tear up.
Yeah.
They misjudged on what it would take. Now they're putting in insulated pipes,
mm-hmm.
heating the water before it
goes in.
Get it into the line, that sort of thing. I'm using city water. I have the sewer line up, but I haven't connected it. I have my own system.
Do you have permafrost here in Kotzebue?
In places, it's thawed down.
Mm-hmm.
Most of it, they're not bothered with that.
Well, isn't it here in Kotzebue that the state of Alaska experimented with a certain type of insulation under the runway? Or was that another?
Yes.
How's that been working out?
I don't know just what the decision is. It's working, it works where they put the insulation and where they didn't, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not too sure whether how much good it has done.
How long has it been installed here?
The year before last they put it in. It went through one winter, I think.
One winter. And did it seem to hold up pretty well this summer?
It did, yeah.
That would be the time to tell.
Yeah. There's one patch down there that they're working on all the time, and I think it was a joint between the two. That they don't pave, it's gravel.
Oh.
And of course they have to just keep working on it.
Yeah.
And I think they were putting in something permanent there. They were working on it just a week or two ago. Yeah, so they tore up, put down this foam insulation, and then buried it again.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. It's the theory is good on it because it's much more permanent. They've had some settling of the runway beyond that. But that was because it was over the old lagoon.
I mean,
just mostly mud underneath.
Mud underneath, yeah.
It's a the runaways had cut our seaplane in Basin 2. When they extended the runway, they cut clear across the lagoon. And they did have an open a stream around the end, but they put a kind of a bridge across that now, so you can't go from one side to the other.
You still have some seaplane operating?
Yes. They operate from either one side or the other of the runway.
Yeah, I see.
Most of them are using the south side of the runway, of the east-west runway.
I noticed the sign out at the airport. It's Ralph Wien Memorial. Is that what it is? Ralph Wien Memorial Airport?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Ralph Wien was killed here in Blanco. And brother Sigmund.
Yes.
No.
Mm-hmm. When was he killed? Do you recall?
It was a few years before I came up here in 1934.
Yeah, seems to me it was very near the time they started flying in this country.
Yeah.
That he had not flown
very
many
years.
It
might have been while I was at Cordova. I've forgotten the exact time. I heard about the time.
When I go out to the airport today, I'll read that sign a little better and check.
Yes, he brought a Blanca up here with a diesel engine in it, which was quite a few of them made it,
mm-hmm.
And it was a very practical engine. The reason that it was the development didn't go that way was it's so hard to get fuel.
Mm-hmm.
It very shortly, every airport had gasoline, but there wasn't enough diesel engines. And I don't know. I may be mistaken, but I think it probably was. Anyway, he was killed by a failure of that engine.
Mm-hmm.
And he had one or two or three Catholic priests with him. He flew the plane. The plane belonged to a Catholic church, and he had at least one man with him, I think two, that came up here, and they had the local priest with them.
Mm-hmm.
And he was coming in to land, and he just suddenly nosed down vertically. Something went wrong, killed them all instantly.
We had an accident on the main runway at Fairbanks on Sunday. Killed the pilot and one passenger instantly.
Small.
It was a Cessna. The pilot was a young fellow, 20. And the passenger was 36. They both worked for Bechtel, which is the management contractor for Alyeska Pipeline. It was right at the east end of the runway. First accident they've had there for a while, but they said it seemed as though that the engine just lost power and it just nosed over to the left and flew in.
Hmm.
So there's a tremendous amount of flying out of the Fairbanks airport right now.